Hey, it's Max Rivers with day 7 of loving conflict, fighting for your relationship, not against each other, just one of the subtitles I thought of. Today, we're finally getting to chapter 2, really the heart of the matter of the teamwork mediation process, which is universal human needs. We've been talking about them throughout the introduction and chapter 1. And today we'll get into more detail about what really makes up a universal human need so that you can start understanding what's going on inside of your relationships and inside of yourself, and you can start to make a difference. So, Universal Human Needs, Chapter 2, the key to those same old arguments, reading from my book. So for many people, there just didn't seem to be anything they could do about setting off those same old arguments, except bend their lives around the things they just couldn't figure out how to resolve. Couples usually say during the first session, "We've tried everything." What we hear is, "We've tried everything we know about." But once they've learned even a little about the teamwork method, by the end of the first hour and a half session together, it already starts to look completely different. If everything people are doing is motivated by their universal human needs, and all of our reactions to everyone are the result of our own needs, then not knowing about needs means you're missing the essential key to relationships. This is really the meat of the matter. If you don't understand about universal human needs, and if they really are the thing which is motivating you to get into relationship and to have conflict inside of relationship and to resolve relationships, then not knowing about universal human needs pretty much hamstrings you for being able to create the kind of relationship that you want. Without knowing about that, you're likely to blame your partner for either being the wrong person or for having done something wrong, which are moral judgments, which are violent and introduce conflict and violence into the relationship and is completely unnecessary. So let's find out about these magical things called universal human needs. It'd be like not knowing water comes out of the tap, or how buttons work, or how a lock and a key works, or like not knowing how to talk to your partner about what is really going on. Feels that basic to us. Once you learn about how universal human needs impact relationship. Why you do everything you do and say everything you say. Nonviolent communication, NVC, teaches that those mysterious forces which seem to be controlling us against our will are the needs that both parties are trying to get satisfied. It is the form of language we use to express these desires that shrouds our most important interactions in mystery. So there's basically two elements here: understanding and knowing that needs are really what's operating is the first piece. And then the form in which you communicate about those needs is the second piece. And those two pieces and a few others, like learning to listen, even if the person does speak violently, and how to negotiate once the needs are on the table, are sort of the total picture of what the teamwork method is about. Probably the single most important contribution NVC founder Marshall Rosenberg made to our understanding of what motivates and confounds human interactions is his idea that everything everyone says, and I would add everything everyone does, is an attempt to get their universal human needs met. The good news is, it's amazingly easy to hear those needs once you know what to look for. In fact, these days to us, that's all that seems to be going on. Everyone is just talking about their needs, needs, needs. Even though most people don't realize that that's what's going on themselves. With knowledge of universal human needs, in a matter of minutes, years-long arguments can be converted from judgments, storytelling, and recrimination into clear, concise, and inviting descriptions of what both parties deeply desire. So this is the reason that we switched from doing mediation to doing NVC-based mediation, because it turns out that just like therapy, focusing on the stories that people are telling or the judgments that people are telling just repeats the problem over and over again. It doesn't get to the root cause. If it's true that universal human needs are what motivate us, then if somebody's having an argument and they don't know what either their and or their partner's needs are, they're going to keep going around and round and round. Once they do know, it uncovers all of this mystery. People talk about relationship being so hard. Yeah, if you don't know what's motivating you and you're arguing about something completely different, and you keep having that argument over and over and over again, yeah, that's going to feel hard. But in the very first session, we're able to take any of the arguments that a couple is having, stop the storytelling and the judgment, pare down what's really going on to what the universal human needs are of both parties, and we don't even have to solve the problem at that point, because once the needs are exposed, the two people are resourced. Our definition of being resourced is knowing the needs that are present. Both parties are resourced to come up with a third option that meets both parties' needs. And that's resolution. That's our definition of resolution, meeting both parties' needs simultaneously. Instead of devolving into another same old argument, this time it can be instantly converted into a needs-based conversation that was hidden for all these years. We had a couple who came into us. They had a fight on their wedding night, and they had that same fight on every anniversary. And they were about to have their 22nd anniversary, and they did not want to have that fight again. They would rather get divorced, this was their solution, than have that fight again. And in 15 minutes, we basically just pared down the judgments and stories that they had told on their wedding night 22 years ago. Because needs never go away until they get met. And so these needs were sitting around watching these two people have this ridiculous fight every anniversary 21 times. And they came to us, and in 15 minutes we identified the needs and they solved the problem. I'm really good at solving problems. I never really get to do it. All I have to do is empathy, listening for the feelings and needs, helping people identify what it is they're needing. And that pretty much resolves the issue. Two people with open hearts and open minds, understanding all the needs that are present that need to be met with any solution that they suggest, will be able to do that. So I think what I'm going to do is skip a little bit. You'll have to buy the book if you want to get all of the wisdom in here. Universal human needs can be divided into two groups: our needs to survive and our needs to thrive. Our concern in this book is a subset of the needs to thrive, specifically those needs that arise in intimate relationships, which are most often experienced as our needs related to connection. So that's really the set of needs that we focus on. People, fortunately, in this culture don't fight that much about needs to survive. I'm sure there are lots of relationships around the world where that is key. We're lucky here to be that our relationships really are about thriving and connection. And those are the ones that we get to work on over and over again. Needs connect us to wisdom. This was something that we discovered after we were doing NVC for a while. We don't know exactly where needs are, where they live, or even if they could be called alive, although Marshall used to talk about them as what's alive inside of you. The same thing goes for feelings. What are they exactly? Nobody knows. And yet everyone knows and experiences emotions. And everybody knows the delight of satisfaction when our needs are satisfied, as well as the frustration when they are not. The way we know is not a mental knowing, but through experiencing sensations in our body. So we talked about this some in some of the earlier things that we read, and we're going to go more deeply into this in two chapters from now about feelings. But essentially what Marshall did is he helped us identify two of the qualities, the unconscious qualities that drive us, feelings and needs. He never mentioned that they were unconscious, but that is in fact where they come from. That's part of the reason trying to think your way through what the problem is in your relationship isn't really using the right tool, because the conscious mind has only sort of a passing secondary understanding of what our feelings are. It can try to name them, and a lot of times it gets that wrong and causes more harm than good, which we'll talk about in the feelings chapter. But the truth is, the way to really do relationship, to do love, to do heartfelt connection, is more an embodied sense, which is why we call our version of NVC embodied NVC. Marshall talked about feelings. I really think what he meant was sensations, embodied sensations. Satisfaction is something that you get a sense of, and so is dissatisfaction, frustration, even anger. These are things that arise inside of our bodies, and Marshall said that needs use feelings to communicate to us. Needs don't have words. They don't go, hey, you're hungry. They create an empty feeling in your stomach, and if you let it pickle for a while, that feeling gets really hollow. It starts to feel like a pain. That's your need, using your body sensations to communicate to you. So while we can't point to the organs in the body that these concepts inhibit, we use a metaphor that describes how these energies function. It is the basis for the approach we will use in this book to describe the relationship between feelings and needs. We came upon this explanation while working with inmates in federal penitentiaries. We got invited with Heart to Heart in New Jersey, Heart to Heart Comienzos, I think is their full name, to teach NVC in the penitentiaries, the prisons in Philadelphia and South Jersey. It was really an amazing experience. And most had little formal education and no personal experience with therapy or philosophy. They were steeped in the most restricted and dysfunctional aspects of society's limiting belief systems. Their experiences consistently were of the soul-crushing kind. And yet, when exposed to NVC for just 1 hour a week, even while living in a microcosm of the worst violence of our culture, a spark of wisdom would light in many of these men and women. Instead of the coarse, violent posing that is de rigueur in prison, they would speak poetry and name the kinds of truths that we study in school. How could this be? Like, where were they getting this from? All we were doing was teaching them the stuff that we're teaching our couples here. And suddenly, with the permission to notice what it is that we're feeling, these sensations are very subtle. They're easy to override. And in the violence and noise and upset of prison, it's really easy to miss them. But meeting with us an hour a week and having an opportunity to focus on the energy of needs and the feelings, that the sensations that they create, the quality of the communication and the understanding that they had of themselves and the people in their lives, including the people involved in the crimes that they were accused of participating in, changed dramatically from the violent model that our society uses into a whole different form of compassion and wisdom. Our metaphor for what needs are and where they live is a place somewhere in our core that is either a repository of wisdom or a junction box to some outside source of wisdom. It's a quiet place, a still small voice that can easily be overridden by the noise of everyday life. But it is also always available. I want to emphasize that. Probably the most amazing thing about this idea of universal human needs and the fact that they communicate to us our own personal wisdom, is that if that is the case, if all you have to do is pay attention and be empathetic with yourself and what's truly going on inside of you, if this is a junction box, either to wisdom or containing your best wisdom, what it means is you always have access to your own perfect wisdom. It may not be everybody's truth, but to your own perfect truth, you always have access to that. We're carrying it around with us. Even inside of prison, we had one prisoner say, I understand now that prison isn't the guards and the guns and the bars. What's been imprisoning me is locking myself out from my own wisdom, my own truth. It's always available, and it seems to know more than we do consciously or individually. I get really smart people coming in as clients, and they're still stuck not being able to figure out how to do relationship. There's intelligence that we have in our conscious mind, and there's this wisdom, this unconscious intelligence that we have, and it's greater and more powerful and a better tool to use in terms of self-satisfaction and doing relationship than the best thinking that really, really smart people are able to do. This part of us stays calm and connected even as the individual's thoughts and feelings get tossed about in a storm of upset. I once was able to heal myself from chronic fatigue by recognizing that although some parts of me were sick, there was always a part of me which was well. And in the same way, no matter how upset you are, and no matter how bad your current situation seems to be, we maintain that inside of you, there is a place which is calm and quiet and knows what's going on. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to connect with that? The nature of needs. Marshall Rosenberg's discovery about the centrality of needs to our happiness led him to delve into the nature of needs themselves. So these are some of the qualities that Marshall and we have identified about universal human needs. They are always positive in their intention and life-affirming. This is really huge. I mean, huge. If needs are the motivation for everything you do and everything you say and everything your partner does and everything that they say, and if needs are always positive in their intention and life-affirming, that means that if something that they do appears to be have a negative intention to it, you must be missing something. Now, the fact that needs are positive in their intention doesn't mean that that positive intentionality makes it all the way out into their communication or even their behavior. I identified 8 places where there's translation that happens. So judgments are an example of trying to communicate a need which has a positive intention and ending having it come out with violence. But the root of what's really going on, if this is true, is positive in its intention and life-affirming. So hunger, for instance, seems like it's a pain, but it's life-affirming, right? If you blocked the communication of hunger, you'd starve to death. So even the dissatisfaction of a need is life-affirming. By paying attention to it and listening to it, you get the positive benefit of this part of you, this wisdom, which is trying to affirm your life, make your life better, and be positive in its intention. Do good in the world for yourself and for the others. That's what needs are about. Incredibly flexible in how they get satisfied. The need for hunger, you may have a preference about what you want for dinner, but anything which is edible will satisfy your need for hunger. And that incredible flexibility makes them the perfect currency for negotiation especially consistent negotiation in an intimate relationship, because understanding what it is your partner needs doesn't lock you in to having to meet it in one particular way. They may have what I call a sticky strategy, a strategy that they have a habit of being the way they do it. And in fact, couples come together with all kinds of sticky strategies, preferences for how they do things when they're alone. And they often try to assert that when they come together. Let me disabuse you of that. You will get your needs met in a mature relationship using this system. It probably won't look anything like what it looked like in your single life. I maintain that it's likely to be a lot better because you're going to be negotiating which of those thousands of strategies will meet that need that also meet your partner's needs. And because their needs are really different than yours, the two of you co-creating a solution that meets both sets of needs are going to come up with something, with a solution, what we call a strategy, which is going to be much more sophisticated than the one that you used when you were alone and will probably meet more needs of yours than what your sticky strategy used to meet. Not to mention the fact that meeting your partner's needs simultaneously means you have a resourced, happy partner. And Marshall says we're hardwired to enjoy meeting other people's needs. And so these co-created solutions are a lot better on a lot of different levels. Needs are the source of all of our satisfaction and dissatisfaction. You want to have a satisfied life? You're not really going to be able to do that without understanding needs, because they're the source of all satisfaction. Now, here's a tough one. Needs are not about other people. They're just what's true about the person whose needs they are. This is another really important fact about needs. Like, unfortunately, in English, you can say stuff like, I need you to clean up your room. Well, the first three words in that sentence tell me this isn't a need, it's a strategy. I want you to do that, but not because I need you to. What need do I have? Oftentimes, I have a need for order. If it's a parent to a child, I have a need for helping you live life well. But what strategy we use, it may turn out that living life well for you means not hanging your stuff up, leaving it in a pile. That you prefer spontaneity and creativity to order. Order is my need. And so maybe what I need is to make sure that the places in my life are orderly and value the needs of yours and come up with a co-created solution. Like in our private spaces, we can each focus on our own needs. And in our community spaces, we want to make sure that everybody's needs are getting met. Another tough one. Needs are not caused by other people, but they or the situation can stimulate awareness of our needs and desires. So you hurt me, you made me mad, those kinds of things, NVC, I mean, Marshall said a long time ago, 25 years ago, those are not true statements. Other people don't cause our feelings and they don't cause our needs. Our feelings, as we just said, are caused by our needs. They're the way the needs communicate to us. But other people can be a stimulus for us in the same way that if I walk by a restaurant and they're cooking something delicious in there, and you know, some of those restaurants have a fan that blows out to spread that wonderful smell onto the street, it may remind me that I'm hungry, but the restaurant or the smell did not make me hungry. They did not cause my need for nourishment. My need for nourishment was caused by all the cells in my body not being nourished over a certain amount of time. The smell stimulated my awareness that I have that need. We walk around with needs, but we're not aware of them until our conscious mind gets stimulated into that awareness. But other people don't cause our needs. You made me angry. It does seem that way. But actually, that's not true. What frustrated you is that you have an unsatisfied need. How do you get that need satisfied? You communicate it. They didn't not communicate it. We didn't. So if you have an unsatisfied need, that's your issue. Needs are not about actions. They require strategies for that. Being able to differentiate between the need, which is the heart's desire, the wisdom of the positive life-affirming intention that's going on inside of you, and the action that we take, which are strategies. In this model, we call the actions strategies. Being able to differentiate between those two will get rid of 80% of your fights. If you are in conflict with someone, you're at the strategic level, because needs are never in conflict, right? I could be starving. You could have just had a 12-course meal. I have a need for nourishment, you don't. How are we in conflict? At the strategic level, it may be difficult to figure out what we're going to do tonight, because I'd like to stop at a restaurant and you want to go right to the movie. So we're going to have to negotiate the strategy, which is going to end up having to be different because our needs are so different. But the needs themselves are not in conflict. Needs are not limited to a specific time frame. Once a need is activated, it never goes away until it's satisfied. Witness the 21-year argument that couple had. Needs are experienced as sensations in the body. When satisfied, we feel pleasant sensations. When unsatisfied, we feel uncomfortable sensations. So that's a quick and dirty introduction to universal human needs, the cornerstone of the teamwork mediation process and the Loving Conflict book itself. I'd like to end with some homework. We've got lots more to talk about needs, and we'll be going more deeply into chapter 2 tomorrow. So your homework for tonight and tomorrow is to notice, first of all, whether or not you're feeling satisfied or unsatisfied. So just check in every once in a while and see if there's something that you're feeling satisfied about. You'll probably notice those are harder to notice than the dissatisfaction. So anytime you feel frustrated, watch how your attention goes out onto other people, blaming them for frustrating you. Like when you're driving your car, the person who pulled over, or all the traffic is the problem. It was only like 3 or 4 months ago I realized that if I'm sitting in traffic, I am traffic. They're not all traffic, and I'm the person. I'm their traffic, just like they're my traffic. So dissatisfaction, notice what happens to your attention and see if you can pull it back and just say to yourself, one of my needs is not satisfied right now. See where in your body you're feeling the sensation of dissatisfaction. Different needs will show up as different kinds of sensation. So hunger is going to show up in your belly. Frustration about someone being late is going to show up in a completely different part of your body than that. Make note of all the places that you feel dissatisfied and see if sometimes you check in with yourself. Like maybe you can set your watch to beep every half hour or something. And just ask yourself, am I feeling satisfied or dissatisfied in this moment? And if you're feeling satisfied, notice what kinds of sensations happen in your body when your needs are being satisfied. Just write out what it is that you noticed. So have fun identifying your needs. Have a very satisfying and unsatisfying 24 hours, and we'll see you tomorrow, where we'll go more deeply into universal human needs. Take care. Bye-bye.